Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You know, I've been PTA president for 2 years. I'm just about to finish my run. And that's been the major revelation of this experience, is how inequitable the system is. And my feeling is, the bottom line is that if you live in a wealthy neighborhood, most likely your public school is fine. And if you live in a poor neighborhood, most likely your public school is not fine or is desperately short of funds.
That was Elizabeth from Brooklyn, a PTA president who called in during our segment on Monday on the way that many parents are asked, if not strong-armed into, adding extra funds to their kids' public school. Now, it's not just Friday. It's Follow-Up Friday, where we dig a little deeper on some of the stories that we discussed this week. And we're going to do this one now. As you can imagine, this can further deepen the divide between wealthier schools with wealthier parents and poorer schools where parents can't give as much, if anything, at all. Even the number of teachers is at stake. WNYC education reporter Beth Fertig has been staying on the story, reporting it out for the WNYC and New York Times Project School Book. Beth, hi.
Hi.
So you have an article out today on schoolbook.org that looks into the question of just what parent funding may pay for. Are the rules simple and straightforward?
Absolutely not. We also aired a piece this morning on WNYC about it, and the challenge was to explain this succinctly on the radio. So I hope I can do it again now. The story that I looked at was specifically schools where the parents are able to hire extra staffers. And this has been going on for years. It's not new. PTAs can raise money and pay for part-time art teachers or even full-time art teachers or band teachers, things like that. But we never knew the extent of it. So what I did was I figured this administration keeps track of data. I submitted a Freedom of Information request back in the fall. I wanted to know how much money every PTA had raised in the city and what it went for. And about 7 months later, I got the response. And I got a very slim 2 pages or 3 pages of an Excel spreadsheet. And I said, hey, there's not very many schools on this list. What's going on? And the DOE explained to me that they only track the money that PTAs raise that they give to their schools. So in other words, if a PTA raises $100,000 or even $20,000, and they use that money to pay directly for ballroom dance lessons or Third Street Music School or any type of after school or extra music program that comes in, that is never tracked by the Department of Education because the PTA does it directly. What the DOE does track is any funds that the PTAs give to the schools. So when I wanted to know how many schools had PTAs that were able to raise staffers, the list that they gave me only showed 40 schools. 40 schools where PTAs had raised money specifically for personnel.
So that raises the question for me of what kind of staff can PTAs hire on their own and what kind of staff must they go through the school or through the Department of Education to hire? And this came up on Monday's show when we spoke with your school book colleague, Kyle Spencer. Here's 18 seconds of what she said.
The thing is, they can't pay for the core teacher salaries, but they do, you know, they will pay for science teachers. One of the schools that we reported on paid $100,000 for the salary of a science and technology teacher. Yes, they can do that. I mean, they can kind of do just about anything.
So $100,000 for a science teacher, that's different than an after-school program. That qualitatively changes the disparity between one child's education and another child's education in another neighborhood in a different way.
Yeah, but just to be clear, the rules prevent PTAs from hiring core instructional teachers. So mandated classes, I'm not sure that they could get away with hiring a science teacher. Maybe a part-time science or technology assistant.
Right. When she says science and technology teacher, maybe that means, computer lab person,
right,
or something like that that's considered technically enrichment.
Right. But for example, the regulations by the chancellor say that school PTAs can donate funds for supplemental staff. So this is not a full-time English or math teacher or a full-time classroom teacher. It could be the music teachers who work with several different classes over the course of the day, or the art teachers. And they can also donate funds to staffers that to hiring staffers that will conduct after school or weekend activities. In all cases, they must get approval of the principal, and then they have to submit a check endorsed to the school that's then turned over to the DOE. They have to hire people in accordance with DOE rules. Everyone is fingerprinted. But then, as I said, we only know of 40 schools that do this. That's what was tracked by the Department of Education for hiring staffers through the Department of Ed. There's another way PTAs can hire staffers. They can do it directly themselves, but there's very strict rules on that. They can only directly hire staffers for after school or weekend activities. And then when they do that, they again need to get approval from the principal, have everyone fingerprinted, follow DOE policies. But if you as a PTA, if you have a nonprofit set up with an accountant, so you're able to manage this, you have to go along with all the IRS reporting rules. You have to deduct, withhold taxes, state and federal and local taxes. Or if you hire someone as a consultant, you have to give them the 1040 form or whatever it is. So you have to really be on top of it to do that. The DOE doesn't track that. They are considered independent entities. Mm-hmm. And if you call schools, for example, that did not show up on the list that I got, I thought, hey, where's PS 41 in the West Village? They raise a lot of money. Why didn't they hire any staff? Or a few other schools, you call around, parents don't want to talk. Mm-hmm. They're very fearful of drawing the DOE's attention to what they're doing, partly because these rules are very confusing and they don't want to get into a situation where maybe they hired someone who's working during the day and maybe that's okay, maybe that's not okay. They don't want the DOE to know, or they just don't want to draw attention to it. So it's very hard to get parents to talk about this, and we don't know the full extent of parent fundraising for staffers because the DOE never looks at this type of activity.
And the teachers union comes in here too. When a PTA cuts a check to a teacher rather than the city, you write that the union rules state that parent associations cannot hire full-time classroom teachers, but they can give the department money to hire part-time staff members, as you've been saying, as well as temporary teaching assistants. So money gets diverted from the PTA back through the DOE, and they can hire teachers, and that's what you've been describing. Does the union care?
The union cared because there was a situation where PTAs were funding teaching assistants or teacher aides, as they're called, people who help out in the classroom and effectively reduce class sizes. This has become very popular among some of the schools that I wrote about, especially on the Upper West Side. One PTA woman said to me, we feel pressure now to have to hire these aides because all the other schools in the neighborhood are doing it. And when parents come to visit, they want to know how many aides are in the classroom, because if you have, 22 or 23 first graders, they want to see that there's not just one teacher, but there's also somebody else to help button their coats, assist with the art projects, give the teacher time to focus on the instruction. So a lot of schools in neighborhoods that can afford to do this will hire the teaching aides. But the UFT wanted to make sure that they weren't going to replace staffers, that they weren't going to work as subs. These folks are paid maybe $12 an hour. So the deal is that the DOE made clear is they have to be temporary. They can't replace anybody.
From Public School 321, William Penn in Park Slope. You report they raised $176,000 for personnel last year, the second highest by a school's PTA in the city. Principal Liz Phillips said that money went to pay for a full-time DOE arts teacher and five part-time consultants. A computer technician, an arts consultant, our after-school coordinator, and two teaching assistants who mainly assist with our conflict resolution mediation program and our after-school program. But that is a lot to add to a particular school. And the reason that this is such a critical conversation, as you know, Beth, is what we heard from the PTA president in the clip we played at the top. This can exacerbate disparity between poorer and richer schools in the system. So has the DOE responded to you or talked publicly elsewhere about when they think this is okay, what they think the larger effects of this really are. This is the public schools where every kid is supposed to get equal treatment under the law.
They don't. They would not talk to me on record. They just gave me statements saying, look at the chancellor's regulations. This is what's clear. This is what's allowed. And these are independent entities. And it seems to be what they don't want to disturb the parents. You know, they want to keep the parents happy. They want to keep middle class and upper middle class families in the system. But to be fair, a school like 321 in Park Slope, Liz Phillips, the principal, told me, you know, we lost $1.4 million over the past few years from budget cuts. And they don't get Title I money, which is for extra money from the federal government for a school that has a lot of poor kids, because they don't have any poor kids practically at PS 321. So they're on their own. When the city makes budget cuts, they don't have extra federal money to help hire teachers. And they, you know, they lean on their parents to do that, and their parents want more. There are cases, though, where schools that get Title I may manage their money in a completely different way. It's really up to the principal. There are poor schools, so to speak, in low-income neighborhoods that get Title I funds that are able to work with all kinds of partners in their communities. The principals are able to get grants. So it's really up to the principals. And this is part of the DOE's response, is that we've created a system in which we put more autonomy in the hands of principals. We try to give them more control over their schools. And so some principals do an excellent job of managing their budgets and shielding their staffers from cuts. And others may not really know how to manage it as well or lean on other resources. And that's part of the disparity, too. The city schools have a funding formula. All poor kids, for example, are supposed to get a little bit of extra aid. It's based on how many types of kids you have in your school. If you have special ed kids, they get more aid. But again, it's up to principals to manage the budgets. And it shakes out a little differently at every school. And then when you have parents who could step in, sometimes it can go above and beyond what a regular school can do. And you have situations in which parents, in addition to paying for extra staffers, are paying for sleepaway trips, for grass-fed beef in their schools if they want it. You know, there's all kinds of things that maybe some people think are silly, but if the parents want it, they can do it.
WNYC's Beth Fertig, you can hear her report on this topic on WNYC.org. You can also see it on our joint education website with the New York Times, schoolbook.org, a follow-up Friday segment on the rules under which PTAs may hire teachers and other staff.
And very quickly, I just want to add, we were not able to look at charter school spending by parents. That was not tracked at all by the DOE, in case anybody was wondering.
So now you've got something to do next week.
Oh, my God, that would take forever.
Beth, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, who has a vested interest in the fracking debate? A new book takes a deep look. It also explores the different conclusions about the impact of fracking by two New York State scientists. Stay with us.